tune and go up off the rim.
Oh, yeah.
Our very own Skywalker, Elissa Walker-Campbell. As she gets you ready for the 2011 NBA Finals with some of the biggest names in the game. Elissa Walker-Campbell delivers sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's. Think big. The Big E Sports Show.
Here we go. We are back as promised, ready to break it all down. We are talking about those Dallas Mavericks, the freshly crowned NBA champions, and always delighted to bring back the guy with the Midas touch who believed all along his mighty Mavs were more than capable of winning their first title in franchise history. Congratulations, Mark. I know the celebration, it is sort of starting to wind down, but my first question to you is, what was it like to go inside that championship locker room and savor all that was accomplished?
Oh, it was fantastic, and good morning, Elissa. Hope all is well, and it was wonderful. You get very, very fortunate to be part of something like that, even if it's only on the periphery. But to see the just complete, unbridled joy, the champagne dousing of everyone in the locker room, and the realization that a long, long, not just season, but for all of those guys, lifetime of work in the game of basketball and the countless hours that you put in the gym working on your game, to see it pay off as being crowned a world champion and the release of emotion that went with that, that was really, really special to see. And so was very, very fortunate to get to be in there and watch that, and just sort of took it all in and couldn't be happier for those guys.
Mark, you're spot on, because I'm sure there was just a myriad of emotions. I am curious, you know, Jason Terry with the gutsy move that proved to be prophetic, you know, getting the tattoo of the Larry O'Brien trophy. Can we expect the same? Are you going to go down and get yourself like a gold mic tattooed on your bicep?
You know, I think that Dominic Jones has got us all beat on that right now, with the fact that he's already gotten a Larry O'Brien trophy tattooed on the side of his neck. So, you know, since he's jumping in the deep end of the pool with Jason Terry, I figure that's probably enough representatives from the Mavs who are doing that. But, you know, I got to hand it to Jet. He talked the talk, he walked the walk, and, you know, not only the trophy tattoo, but the calling out, for lack of a better term, of LeBron James over the course of that final series, and he backed it up, and now because of it, he's an NBA champion. Good for him.
The great Mark Folliwell is with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. He needs no introduction. He is the Mavs television play-by-play announcer, of course, here in Dallas-Fort Worth and in the Metroplex. You can listen to him on 1310 The Ticket. And my question also, Mark, we got to talk about is, what does this NBA championship, what does it mean for the city of Dallas? Because the legacy now of the Mavericks is forever changed. They're not going to go down as like the Buffalo Bills of the NBA.
Well, I think what it means for the city of Dallas is really, it's really hard to measure, but I think it means a lot to a lot of people, Elissa, because, you know, around here, look, we got very, very used to winning with the Cowboys' success that they had. But since they won a Super Bowl in 96, January of 96, there was the Stars Championship in 1999, the Stanley Cup title, which certainly I don't mean to put that down, but that's, you know, that was a team that had 6 years of roots in the area at the time. You know, as Randy Galloway says, we woke up one morning and somebody had left the hockey team on our front porch. So, you know, look, we appreciated it all when it happened. There was a lot of people that went to the parade in downtown Dallas and the Stars won. So that was a neat deal, and that was really, really exciting. I don't mean to take away from it at all, but it wasn't like one of the, you know, really big franchises like a Rangers, Mavs, or Cowboys, obviously, winning a championship. But it was nice, for sure. But it's been 12 years since, and we've had the Stars losing the Stanley Cup Finals once. The Mavs, obviously, with their loss in the NBA Finals and the very, very controversial and just really, really disappointing fashion, the way that went down in 2006. The Rangers lost in the World Series in 2010. I don't know that that was as much of a disappointment. That was probably a little bit of, we're just happy to be here. But still, when you get that far and you come up short, that's still a hard thing to take to some degree. The Cowboys had a great 13-3 season a few years ago and then get bounced by the Giants in the first playoff game. That was, you know, a couple of years ago under Wade Phillips. So, you know, the city has had a lot of close shaves in terms of teams that were really good but weren't able to succeed at the highest level, and so there is a level of disappointment that goes along with that. So from a sports fan aspect of things, you know, there was a little bit of weight on our shoulders about, well, gosh, why can't we close the deal? Why can't we get to the final round? They can't close the deal. Well, now there's no more questions about that. And I think that this city was just ready to celebrate a championship after 12 long years of not being able to do it, and the way everyone acted during the playoff run and the aftermath of the finals with the parade, the welcoming home of the team at Love Field, all that sort of business. It was obvious that this thing meant a lot to the city of Dallas, and I'm not surprised at all, and happy for all the sports fans and the Maverick fans in particular here.
I think Rick Carlisle said it best too, Mark, because he said Dallas is an uncompromising city. When you play here, you've got to win. You've got to win big. And now they've got to go out and defend this title.
Well, and there will certainly be time to think about that going forward. I think that that right now everybody is still celebrating this one. Defense of that championship will start soon enough, hopefully if everything works out okay with the NBA labor situation. But at some point the page will have to turn, and they will have to start focusing on getting ready for next year and preparing themselves for defense of the championship, because now when you've won, then you know that there's an even bigger target on your back, and you're going to get teams' best game night in, night out. People are going to look to you to measure themselves and to prove themselves against you, so that will be one of the things that Dallas has to deal with next season.
Well, and they've got that confidence, knowing that when you have a great owner like Mark Cuban, who is willing to do whatever is necessary, and he executes on his part, that the Mavs can be successful. He's the guy that can make it happen.
Well, there's no question that they're going to be opportunistic this summer and looking for talent. They'll have some areas that they'll want to re-sign their own free agents. They'll have areas where they'll probably have to look to bring in a couple of guys. Maybe they've got some young guys they can bring in. Rebuilding or retooling or preparing this team, whatever you want to call it, getting this team ready to defend its championship next year in terms of the personnel aspect of things is not something that I look at with a great deal of concern. Obviously, priority number one will be re-signing Tyson Chandler. We don't know the parameters of the new collective bargaining agreement yet, so that could present some difficulties to it. But I think that as long as that doesn't keep it from being an impossibility, which I don't think it will, the way things sound to me, there certainly has been a lot of movement made by the owners in terms of those negotiations. So obviously, priority number one has to be re-signing Tyson Chandler because of what he meant to the thing. And I'll be very, very, very surprised if that doesn't get done.
Mark Folliwell along with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We do want to direct you to our radio website. That is eradiosports.com. And just a moment ago, Mark, you were talking about the celebration at the AAC, the parade. And I thought it was really cool just to listen to the fans, how they responded and recognized, as we're talking about Mark Cuban, all that he has done for this city and the organization. He really does put his money where his mouth is. He delivers. And just hearing that feedback and that love and them chanting, "Thank you, Mark," it was a special moment. And, of course, you were right there in the middle of it, being the MC of this event.
Oh, there were a lot of special moments during the rally at the American Airlines Center last Thursday. It was a great event, and of course that was one of the most goosebump providing moments, if you will, whenever the fans were chanting "Thank you, Mark."
Yes.
Look, Mark is a guy who's been in Dallas for a lot of his adult life, recognizes the bond between the Mavs and the city, was there for some good times in the 80s, some terrible times in the 90s, and then obviously purchased the team January 4th, 2000. And what I said then, still holds true, obviously, that Mark came in here and took over a franchise that was as moribund as it gets in the NBA at that time, after 10 straight years out of the playoffs and being what Sports Illustrated called the worst pro sports franchise of the 90s. They were just, to be perfectly honest, they were terrible.
Wow.
In the 90s, and there was never really much of anything to hang your hat on as a fan. So he came in there and changed the culture. He started talking about winning and going to the playoffs and building up expectations, so much so that David Stern thought he was building up the expectations too much just right out of the chute. But he spent money, he challenged the establishment, he was irreverent, and just changed the culture of things. He I think, made it a better workplace for Don Nelson and Donnie Nelson after those guys had struggled and the town was down on the Nelson leadership. But, he went and embraced them and felt like that their level of experience in the NBA was something that he needed to learn from, so they stayed on and obviously did great things together, Mark and Nelly and Donnie Nelson. So, like, everything that Mark has done over the years hasn't been perfect, but, you certainly can't argue with the fact that, like I said, from the get-go, Mark came in and wanted to change the culture and wanted to talk about winning, and he's really spared no expense when it's come to putting a winning team on the floor. lost a lot of money over the years. He's paid a lot in luxury tax. He's taken on a lot of bad contracts and trades so he could acquire good players. He signed some players to contracts that maybe people felt like they weren't worth because they wanted to keep their talent. He's done a lot of things from a financial standpoint and from a hard work and energy standpoint to keep this thing as good as it possibly can be. He resisted the urge to trade Dirk or blow things up when a lot of people were clamoring for it. And he's just, he's in some regards stayed the course with sticking with Dirk, and it all paid off in the end. And I think that's what makes this story so neat, is it's about not only for the players like Dirk and Jason Terry, but for Mark to some degree. It's about perseverance and a long road, and sticking to your values and your principles and ultimately having that validated.
It is a great testament to perseverance and fortitude. Let's step back and just kind of dissect and reflect on how this championship, Mark, came into fruition, because the Mavs truly did face such incredible competition, formidable opponents, Portland, Lakers, OKC, and then Miami. Who was your favorite in terms of the opponent that they had to face?
Well, I think that, Portland really provided them, one could argue, the toughest matchup they had in the playoffs, because the Mavs had the first-round hurdle, the first-round mental obstacle that they had to get past with all of the disappointments in the first round over recent years, and playing in that just absolute madhouse that was the Rose Garden up in Portland. So when you consider that the Trailblazers tested them with tying that series at 2-2, coming back in Game 4 from down 23 in the second half, for what was just an epic collapse and what caused a lot of people to start saying, well, this is the same old Mavs again, you could really say, you could make an argument that their first-round opponent, the Trailblazers, tested them like no one else. And then once Dallas was able to get past Portland, then there was a weight of the world lifted off their shoulders. They were able to play a little bit more relaxed in some regards and really play up to their potential and not have that that mental burden that they had been facing going into that first-round series because of past first-round failures. So, look, there's a lot of things you could say about the Lakers series. If one shot turns out differently with Kobe taking a three to win the game with a buzzer at the beginning of Game 1, then maybe that series turns out differently. But the Mavs rose up to the challenge of Game 1 with the comeback, and then when everybody was expecting a championship answer from Game 2, in Game 2, that is, from the Lakers, the Mavs were able to meet that challenge and meet the same challenge in Game 3. And Oklahoma City is a great, great young team, but the Mavs, I think their experience was able to win that series for them, and it was able to carry them to a series victory in 5 games. And then, the Miami series really sort of summed up what this team was all about in terms of the perseverance aspect of things, because they adjusted and they got better as the series went along. Obviously, through the first 3 games of the series, I think there was a lot of pessimism about where things stood for Dallas. They were down 2-1. People were saying, well, gosh, you could so easily argue that Miami could be up 3-0. It took a historic comeback for Dallas in Game 2. But the Mavs were able to gut it out in Game 4 and then just get better and really find their stride offensively in Game 5 and 6. So as I look back at the playoff run, all those series were tough. There are certainly things that you can take that are great memories out of all of them. But maybe more than anything, I think that the biggest thing that defines this playoff run is there's 3 things, and it's number 1, how well Dirk played, number 2, how well this team executed in crunch time situations in the final 5 minutes of the game. But the thing that's the great story about it is that this thing had 3 momentum-changing victories on the road. I mean,
yes.
This really, really drastically changed the momentum of those series with their comebacks, and that's the 16-point comeback against the Lakers in Game 1, the 15-point comeback in Game 4 with 5 minutes left against Oklahoma City, and, of course, the 15-point comeback with 7 minutes left in Game 2 against Miami. All of those series were really changed because of those. You might see one of those in a playoff run, but to see 3 wins like that, that really is just a huge story that the Mavericks were able to ride those wins, in essence, to a championship, because, like I said, those wins all changed the momentum of those series drastically, and that, more than anything, is what I'll take away from this run, just how special and out of nowhere those wins were, and it was really, really exciting to see them all.
I wanted to get your thoughts on a couple of those comebacks, but I thought what was really amazing is how Coach Carlisle was able to get his guys to remain steadfast and to stay in the moment and just continue to just segment each thing, whether it was a possession or a game. I mean, they were just taking it one thing at a time and not getting ahead of themselves.
Well, I really like Rick as a coach. I really have thought the world of him in his last 3 years here. I thought he's done a lot of good things. And, you know, all the stuff that he says to the media publicly are the same way that he handles things privately, in terms of you have to be persistent, you have to go into the game not thinking about a result. You go into the game thinking about a process and doing the things that you know are part of your formula for success and your formula for winning. And so, you know, he says NBA games are long and there's a lot of possessions and you've got to focus on winning each possession, and all that stuff sounds so trite and so coach speak, but there's a lot of truth to it. And so, you know, Rick said that stuff publicly. He preached it to them privately and then huddles over the course of the game. And, you know, we've talked about this before, Alyssa. I think that being a head coach at any level certainly requires an element of charisma. Charisma, I think people naturally gravitate toward the definition of that being that you're loud and you're boisterous and you're over the top and you're shining the spotlight on yourself. That's not necessarily what I mean by charisma. The other way I think you could say that is that you just have to have it, and it's hard to define, but we know it when we see it. And with Rick, you know, the way it sort of manifests itself, and there's different ways for this to happen. It can be the coach who's the yeller and the screamer on the sideline, the guy who's ruling with the iron fist. But in Rick's case, there's just an unflappable nature about him on the sideline that that gives me this comfort in watching things, that he's in complete control. He knows what he wants to do. He knows what he wants the team to get accomplished. And just really, really like how he handles himself, his unflappable sideline demeanor. And I think that because of that, his team played with a certain level of being unflappable, if you will, during games. They didn't get rattled. They were persistent. They were able to look at adversity and deal with it. They were able to overcome those difficult situations of being down big deficits on the road and manage to find a way to come back and win those games. So I thought, much like many, many teams do, that the team ends up taking on some of the personality, some of the traits of its own head coach, and I think we definitely saw that in this run.
Mark Folliwell with us this weekend on the Big East Sports Show. We're highlighting and talking about their outstanding coach in Rick Carlisle, just that even-tempered approach. It really does foster that consistency and confidence. He never lets them see you sweat, and that really, as you said, the team picks up on that, and they're able to execute.
Well, and look, you want your leaders to be leaders, and part of leadership is knowing where you want to go and have people be able to follow you. And you know, Rick's got that. Dirk has developed that. Jason Kidd has that. And you're not going to win a championship if you don't have the right kind of leadership. And that's the one thing that people have sort of questioned about the Mavericks in years past. And clearly, from the head coach to the point guard to the best player, all three of those guys, Carlisle, Kidd, and Dirk, provided the key elements of leadership during this run. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Okay, we got to hit on Dirk. Let's talk about the guy that has been the face of the franchise for more than a decade. Obviously, he needs no introduction. He is going to go down now as one of the greatest players that has ever been a part of this game, and it really solidifies that he is now in the same lineage as so many of the great ones, like Jordan and Magic Johnson.
Well, you know, look, I've thought the world of Dirk for a long, long time, and I've respected him as a person. Just what a genuine guy he is, and you won't find a more likable superstar out there. And I've loved his game, too, and the things that he's accomplished in his career. I've never felt like Dirk's had to apologize to anyone for what's taken place in his career up until now. But the bottom line is this, is that, you know, if you're not watching the guy every day, game in, game out, to have a feel for his true greatness, then ultimately people are going to judge you on, at least part of it anyway, the ultimate test and the ultimate scoreboard in your favor is winning a championship ring. And I love what Rick Carlisle said about Dirk and all these guys now, is that in this business now, they're made men now that they have a championship ring. And Dirk's right there at the top of the list now. And his legacy certainly is something that he didn't want to get into and he didn't want to talk about it. But there's no question it's cemented. There's no question that I think that when you hear Dirk say, you know, they can't take this away from us or from me, you recognize how important it is to him, because he's a competitor. And he knows that, look, ultimately, you're going to be judged based on what you do at the end in terms of what you do in the finals and what you do in terms of getting your team to a championship. So I think Dirk understands how the game is played. And like I said, he doesn't have to apologize to anyone for anything that happened in his career up until this point. But the bottom line is that, yes, you to a lot of people that observe sports and are the ones who are in position to make judgments on these things, then you've got to have that last piece to the puzzle. You've got to have that ring. And he's got it, and Kidd's got it, and those are two guys that are no doubt Hall of Famers. I thought they were before. There's no question they are now. And not only is Dirk a Hall of Famer, but as Rick Carlisle said at the rally last week, that he's the best player on the planet today. And right now, I think you'd have a hard time finding an argument to that.
You know, to back that up, it's interesting. We had Phoenix Suns great Alvin Adams on our show last week, Mark, and he talked about, you know, for years, everyone has pointed to Kobe Bryant as being recognized as that ultimate game closer. And as you just said, you know, all eyes are on Dirk right now as perhaps, you know, the top offensive weapon. When the clock's winding down, this is the guy that you want to go to. Would you agree?
Well, you know, in the last 2 or 3 years, Alyssa, there's a lot of numbers that back that up, that when you look at players who have made more shots with a game on the line in the last 2 and 3 seasons, Dirk and Kobe are the top two guys. Carmelo Anthony is pretty high up there as well. But Nowitzki and Kobe have been at the top of the list in terms of guys who make shots at the end of games. And Dirk did it in the regular season. He did it in the playoffs. I mean, the basket against Miami at the end of game two. The one that held him off at the end of game four, the driving layup that gave him a 3-point lead. You know, you look at the Oklahoma City series and all of those shots that he made down the stretch in game four,
yeah,
part of the comeback. Game five, he hits a three that gave him the lead for good at 95-94 with just a little over a minute left to play. He hits the big free throws late in game four in Oklahoma City that forces overtime. He hits the big free throws against the Lakers at the end of game one that gave them the lead with whatever it was, 19 or 20 seconds to go. Big shot late in game three against Oklahoma City. Big shot late in game one against Portland. Big free throws late in game six against Portland. The list goes on and on and on about all of the things that he did in this playoff run that were crucial baskets. Even if it wasn't the final play of the game, it was very, very late in the game where he had to step up, and he did it.
Mark, you know, there were so many great moments, but I have to tell you, one of my personal favorites, and you just talked about it, was in Game 2 at Miami when Dirk did not settle for that jump shot. He took the driving layup, and there was a cutaway shot at the end of the game, and Caron Butler, just the look on his face, it was priceless. I mean, it was respect, astonishment, and, you know, just, Dirk, you are the man.
Well, his teammates know how important he was to this thing. And, you know, for all of the talk I said earlier about being judged about rings and whatnot, and of course that's how people are going to judge you in a lot of ways, but I think that if you look at Dirk's teammates that he's had over the course of time here, they all have great and tremendous respect for his game. And his peers around the league, if you look at, you know, these websites that are clearing houses for NBA player Twitter feeds, you know, you see a lot of things that those guys are saying about his game. So while I sit there and talk about the importance of rings, or at least getting a ring, I think there's no replacement for having the respect of your teammates and the respect and admiration of your peers in the game. And Dirk clearly has that as well. And the game two, the play at the end of game two was another example of it. You know, the Heat probably played that in a way that left some people scratching their heads with Bosch defending Dirk in that point and not taking a foul to give. But Dirk, you know, so much of being a good player or a great player is also being able to recognize situations, being able to take what the other team gives you, as the cliche goes. And that's exactly what happened there with Dirk in that situation at the end of game two, and it turned out to be one of the biggest baskets of the series because it capped a game that was such a momentum changer. If the Mavs come down 2-0, back home down 2-0 to Miami, then who knows how this thing plays out. But they didn't, and I think we can all see what an impact winning that second game in such dramatic fashion had on the series.
They certainly did shock the Heat. Mark Folliwell with us just a few more minutes this weekend on the Big East Sports Show. I also want to talk to you about Game 4 against Miami. How was Dirk able to make such a quick turnaround? We know in Game 4, I mean, he came on strong late in the fourth, but he was struggling mightily throughout the game. I mean, missing high percentage shots. How did he make such a quick turnaround in 2 days? I mean, did Holger like brew up some German comfort food or something? I mean, how did he get back to his usual self? I mean, he didn't skip a beat, and he even said that in postgame.
Well, you know, look, he was getting a lot of treatment from the training staff and was getting as much rest as possible. The Mavs have a great athletic training staff and medical staff, and so they were doing everything humanly possible to get him as well as quickly as they could. And you know, the other thing is this, is I talked to Rolando Blackman about it. We had the postgame show that night after game four on Fox Sports Southwest when Dirk was so sick but was still able to come through with some big plays in the fourth quarter. And you just have a mental reservoir, you know, that you can tap into. And I don't know what it's like, but those great players that compete at that level, they just got that, like he said, I think it's a great way to put it, a mental reservoir that you can tap into. And there's an element of toughness. There's an element of just being able to fight through pain or discomfort where, you know, you realize the stakes, how important the game is, and, you know, you don't want to let yourself down, you don't want to let your teammates down. And Dirk had waited, you know, 5 long years to have an opportunity to be back in the moment, and I think that probably speaks to what he was able, you know, to do more than anything, is that it was just, you know, I'm not going to squander this opportunity. I've learned how precious these opportunities are, and this is an opportunity I just can't let slide by, and so I've got to suck it up and be able to find the inner strength and mental reservoir to play well here in the fourth quarter. And then I think once he did that, then, like you said, you know, the Mavs have a great training staff, a great medical staff. Dirk's been a guy who, one thing that's happened over his career is he has been susceptible to a lot of colds and sinus infections. He's probably got a pretty good, you know, way of dealing with it now. He probably, you know, clearly knows his own body well and knows what he needs to do, what he needs to take, how he needs to get his rest, how he needs to, you know, to get himself well as quickly as possible, and he was able to do that.
Can you quickly, Mark, just hit on Holger Geschenvinder? I mean, he is his basketball mentor, his coach's friend, but he's really been his ace in the hole. I mean, very valuable to Dirk and has been his secret weapon.
Well, you know, Dirk, you know, Holger's the guy basically who discovered Dirk back when Dirk was playing and, you know, 15, 16 years old and saw, you know, tremendous talent and tremendous ability. He saw the tools. He just needed, you know, to have someone to help him organize the tools and the toolbox, if you will. So, you know, Holger saw Dirk at a very young age, offered him the opportunity to work with him. You know, Holger had, you know, had been in West Germany and had picked up basketball from some of the American military guys who were playing over there, and really has a very unique approach to it. You know, has been quoted in the past as saying that basketball is jazz, and so there are, you know, a lot of skills and a lot of tools, but there is an element of expression and individualism that exists within the sport that you know, makes for that comparison. So, improvisation skills, if you will. So, you know, Holger's got a unique way of looking at things, but, you know, he's tried to, you know, work with Dirk for all these many years and help him improve aspects of his game each offseason. Is someone who helps him clear his mind in the offseason to prepare himself for the work that he's got to do to get better, and then is someone who's there to help him during the season whenever Dirk hits a rough patch. Holger's a guy who is not with the team all the time, but certainly is there frequently to help him and help him get his mind back on track and remind him of the little things that sometimes you get bad habits and you get out of your comfort zone, and you need someone who you trust, who's a coach, who knows you really well, to remind you of those little things that you got to do. And that's been the kind of guy that Holger's been all these years for Dirk. Dirk clearly has tremendous respect for him. And you know, look, the championship meant a lot to a lot of people. And I think that when you saw Holger and how emotional he was getting, then, you know, there's no question that in his case, there's a happiness for Dirk, and there is a realization and a reward for all of those years of hard work and those hours in the gym that nobody has a camera on in the middle of July and August somewhere in the Black Forest of Germany where nobody's watching, but all of those hours and all of that work ended up paying off.
Die Schwarzwald, right?
If you say so, Alyssa.
Mark Folua with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show, and I got to ask you, I mean, has Holger been working with Brendan Haywood on the free throws? When I was at the shoot-around when they're getting ready for Miami, I was counting. He was 9 for 9 from the free throw line. I mean, his approach has really improved, and you can see his confidence. I mean, Brendan, some of his play, I mean, it was valuable. He really provided some quality minutes out there.
Well, no question. You know, he was a big body, you know, size to clog up the middle and deal with some talented players like Aldridge in the first round, you know, in the second round, having to deal with Bynum and Gasol inside. So certainly Brendan Haywood helped. His contribution in games 4 and 5 against Oklahoma City in terms of the free throws, I don't think that can be overlooked. He went 5 of 8 in game 4, and he went 5 of 6 from the line in game 5. And when we're talking about games that the Mavericks had to, in Game 4, make a huge comeback to force overtime, and then in Game 5, the clincher, we're talking about a game decided by 4 points. So those are obviously big, big points that Haywood was able to provide in terms of hitting his free throws at a much, much better clip in those last two games, that Oklahoma City series, that is. Unfortunately, he got hurt, and his contribution was minimal in the Miami series. But, you know, Jan Mahimi was able to step up and fill that void along with Brian Cardinal. But in Haywood's case, as far as the free throws go, you know, from what I understand and what I saw this year, when the lights aren't on and the cameras and the crowd's not there in practice, he did really, really well on a lot of occasions this year and would routinely make, you know, 18 out of 20 or, or, you know, 40 out of 50 or something like that over the course of a practice. And then something would happen, I guess in golf they call it the yips, and, you know, he's not the first guy to deal with that on the bright lights and the big stage when you get on the free throw line. And then it becomes, you know, it sort of avalanches downward. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. But, you know, hopefully that will be an aspect of Brendan's game that will get a little bit more in line with his career numbers next year. Going into this season, he was a guy who had shot for his career in the low 60s on average. The worst free throw shooting season he'd had of his career was 06-07 when he shot around 55%. So to drop down into shooting 36% for the regular season was a statistical anomaly as compared to the rest of his career.
Wow.
And hopefully, like I said, he can get it back in line with the rest of his career leading into this past season, because if he would get back to shooting around 60%, I think everybody would be happy with that.
The great Mark Folliwell has been with us this weekend on the Big East Sports Show. Mark, we certainly appreciate your time. My final question for you is kind of gaze into the future, be that fortune teller. Any thoughts on the CBA? I mean, what's your insight? What can you expect?
Well, you know, I this past week, I've seen some things that led me to have a little bit of optimism. The owners have moved from a $45 million hard cap and wanting to eliminate guaranteed contracts to a flex cap of around $62 million, even though there would be a hard ceiling above that. I don't know what the number is on that. That really hasn't come to the surface yet. They've said, okay, we're okay with guaranteed contracts. We just want shorter lengths of contracts. You know, it certainly appears like the owners are making some movement. I don't know if they're going to be able to bridge the gap between now and the 1st of July, whenever the collective bargaining agreement expires. I'd like to think that everybody involved realizes that, you know, that this is not the NFL where it's a bunch of people arguing about that there's $9 billion in revenue and owners just want to keep more of it. This is a situation in the NBA where the financial model may not be quite as sustainable, where money isn't being printed and being made hand over fist like it is in the NFL. So there does need to be a little bit of a sea change on how things are done. But the other part of the argument is that, look, ratings were tremendous during the playoffs this year, tremendous during the finals. The quality of play, the competitiveness of the games going all the way back to the first round was just fantastic. And I think that, you know, you'd really, really, this is not the NFL, and you would really be making a mistake to kill the momentum of your sport. So, you know, I go into it thinking that ultimately cooler heads are going to have to prevail, that this isn't about, you know, breaking the union. You do need to have some changes, and I do think that there needs to be a different way of doing business to help, you know, provide for financial viability and competitiveness for all the teams and all markets across the NBA. So my gut reaction to it is that we'll probably get to the June 30th, July 1st time frame, the end of the CBA, and right now I'm still not terribly optimistic that a agreement will be reached by then. Probably what I see happening is, you know, they want to avoid legal battles like with the NFL, a protracted court battle like what they're going through there. And I think that they'll somehow manage to do that through the summer and the fall, and we'll end up settling the thing where maybe training camp and the preseason get abbreviated, sort of what I think ultimately is going to happen in the NFL, by the way. I think training camp and preseason might be a little bit abbreviated. It might come down to the wire there. But I want to think, and so I guess I'm going to use some heart over my head here and think that this thing's going to get settled in time for them to have, if not a full season, very, very close to it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, you'd certainly hate, as you talked about, Mark, just the momentum right now, you'd hate for them to have to compress the schedule. Listen, we are way overdue. Just direct all of our listeners where they can go in the off season and check out your work, and I'm assuming you'll still be doing stuff on 1310 The Ticket here in Dallas.
Yeah, there'll be a little bit of that, and there will be, you know, a lot of relaxing, more than anything. So if I have any pertinent information, of course, I'll tweet it out at mfollowwill over the course of the off season. But mainly just want to catch up on some things around the house and relax, and let's see how this NBA offseason plays out and get ready to defend a championship.
What are you talking about, Mark? You need to head over to Europe. Go to Germany. Go to the Black Forest, right?
Well, let's see how the lockout works out, and if things work out in such a way where I can do that, you never know. It's certainly possible. It would be a dream to get to do something like that, for sure. It sounds like, based on what I heard you say earlier, that you're going to have to give me a quick lesson in German before I go over there.
There we go. Mark, listen, thanks so much for stopping by, and congratulations on all the success and this amazing run-in season.
Anytime, Alyssa. It was great to talk to you.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Jason Peter with our Under the Helmet segment. Stay close.